ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Welcome to Medialand, your weekly look at what's happening behind the scenes and on your screens. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Vivian Kelly. Welcome back, Tim.
Viv, I think jet lag may be worse than a hangover.
I disagree. We'll be digging into the future of SBS with its managing director in a minute. But first, a trial, a verdict, and the media melodrama surrounding it all.
On Monday, a jury returned their verdict on a murder trial in the regional Victorian centre of Morwell.
But I'm sure everyone listening to Medialand knew that, didn't you?
It would be very, very hard not to, Viv.
The trial and conviction of Erin Patterson for three counts of murder and one of attempted murder have been some of the most covered events in years in Australian media. A lot of the reporting was very straight, as heard here from ABC's Rachel Brown outside the courthouse.
Erin Patterson has been found guilty of murdering three relatives by lacing their meals with death cup mushrooms. Investigative reporter Rachel Brown from the ABC's podcast Mushroom Case Daily joins us now from Morwell. Rachel, can you tell us about the moment in the courtroom when the verdict was read out?
Of course, you could have heard a pin drop. The foreperson was asked if the jury had reached a verdict. She said yes. And then we heard the four verdicts. So first, on the count of attempted murder against Ian Wilkinson. He was the surviving guest from that lunch, and the verdict was guilty. And then for the three murder counts, first Heather Wilkinson, Ian's wife, and then Gail and Don Patterson, which was Simon Patterson's parents, and three guilty verdicts for them.
But that tone was not the only one used, was it, Tim?
It really wasn't. And it sort of depended where you were looking to your media. Certainly it felt on social media, even before the verdict came in, you were getting some very flippant takes, and then even more so afterwards. And it was sometimes quite hard to remember that there were real people and real victims involved in all of this.
Yeah, part of the issue is everybody, every media organisation knew that viewers, eyeballs, smartphones would be seeking out content about this case, and they had to keep finding new ways in, new takes, new opinions, because beyond she's guilty and we don't yet have a sentence, that's only two stories. Some outlets did upwards of 30 stories. One of the ones that I saw was on the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, and it was called Why Did She Do It? And it was a psychiatrist or psychologist talking about how Erin Patterson allegedly exhibits traits of narcissistic personality disorder. That's how far these headlines went, that we were diagnosing somebody we've never met with a condition.
Yeah, I, as you say, there were so many takes. I think if the media needs to be defended, there was something about this that did genuinely become an Australian cultural moment. I've a feeling we will remember and talk about this case for years to come. And I'm not sure that was necessarily just created by the media. They were certainly serving some sort of interest from the audience as well.
Yeah, I had a chat to a few people about this because there are a lot of news consumers out there who are saying, I'm sick of this story, I'm sick of the media talking about it, but the viewing numbers are there, and even just overhearing things in the pubs, cafes and restaurants around the traps. If you tune into other people's conversations, as much as everybody's saying, I'm sick of it, they are all talking about it. And it's slightly reminiscent of the case in the 80s, Lindy Chamberlain, who at the time was convicted of murdering her child, and that was subsequently overturned. But back in the day, a lot of people just believed she was guilty and said that as such. And as time's gone on, perhaps their opinion has evolved. I guess The difference here, though, is the news cycle moves so much quicker. We've got daily podcasts. We've got to update the homepage on the website. So instead of people maybe reading one article about Lindy Chamberlain per day, in 2025, they might have read seven articles about Aaron Patterson and then had a conversation about it and then listened to a podcast and then read about whether or not she allegedly had narcissistic personality disorder.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess it's worth making the point with Lindy Chamberlain. She was convicted, but then that conviction was later rightly overturned. But you'd absolutely, if that was today, you would be, somebody would call something dingo cast. I'm certain of it.
And look, it's not over yet. There's still sentencing and possible appeals, and we see no sign of the media scrum abating along the way.
A surprise move from broadcaster Michael Christian this week to take his former employer, Southern Cross Austereo, to court, Viv.
Yes, another court story that could well capture the attention of media consumers around the country. People listening might not automatically know the name Michael Christian off the top of their head or even Southern Cross Austereo, but he was a radio host, and Southern Cross Austereo owns various radio stations and networks across the country, including the Hit Network, Today FM in Sydney and Triple M all around the place. And it was years ago that they might recall the Royal Prank Call saga, in which Michael Christian and his co-host at the time, Mel Grieg, put in a call to the hospital where Kate, the Duchess of Cambridge, was staying at the time with what we were told was severe morning sickness.
Yeah, it at the time, it seemed relatively harmless. They'd done this cheeky thing. They'd got through by doing comedy voices, effectively. But unfortunately for everybody concerned, the nurse who'd happened to pick up that phone during the night shift had been fooled and had put it through. And at the time, it was very much treated as, here's a funny little prank. And then, of course, it just took this terrible twist when the news came through that after this negative publicity, as far as the palace was concerned, the nurse had taken her own life.
Yeah, so I guess before anything went wrong, the idea that Michael Christian and Mel Grieg could pass themselves off as then Queen Elizabeth and Prince Charles was pretty laughable. So obviously they didn't foresee what would happen next. People might be wondering, well, this was so long ago, why would there be a court case about it now? And that would be a valid question. Mel Grieg settled her grievances with Southern Cross Austereo quite a while back. Until very recently, Michael was continuing to work there as Today FM's morning announcer. He'd been with the organisation for decades. His role was made redundant in February of this year. Now, his action against Southern Cross Austereo sort of argues two things. One is that it's not a genuine redundancy because somebody still needs to fulfil the role of morning announcer on Today FM. You know, that station does not have dead air between the hours of 9 a.m. and 12 p.m. So his argument is, how can it be a redundancy? That role still exists. The other, Tim, as I understand it, is that Michael feels like he was sort of promised a future at this organisation, and that if he didn't speak up about the way he was treated or the decisions that were made that led to this prank going to air and the pressure that he allegedly felt from his employers to do that, he feels like that was sort of betrayed, and actually him and Mel were the fall guys for what should have been the organisation's fault.
Look, I think that's a really fair point as well. Over the years, I've spoken to Mel at least a couple of times, actually, and she was hugely damaged by the affair as well. You know, it's an incredibly hard thing to live with, to think that you've had some sort of hand in somebody else's death, no matter how much logically I'm sure they would have been cancelled, that clearly there was a lot of other things going on. But we saw the two of them go in very different directions with, as you say, Michael sort of stay with the network but rebrand himself. So his on-air personality or name became MC, I presume, because, you know, his sort of broadcast name was otherwise too much associated with that. Whereas, yeah, Mel Grieg went in her own direction away from radio. But yeah, looking back, it's really easy to point to all of the things that the radio network could have done differently to support its on-air people when there was a moment when their bosses could have stood up and taken some of that fire for them, and they just didn't.
At this stage, there are so many steps involved before this case ends up playing out in court. But if it does make it all the way, Tim, imagine what we might learn about how these media companies were acting at the time. And speaking of media companies in flux, what's going on with magazine publisher R Media, Tim?
They are for sale, Viv. Now, if the name R Media isn't particularly familiar, they used to be called Bauer Australia. And before that, ACP Magazines. That was back when the Packer family owned the company. Mercury Capital bought them in 2020.
R Media's current portfolio includes the Australian Women's Weekly, Woman's Day, New Idea, Who, TV Week, Take Five, Better Homes and Gardens. So, Tim, some people might not realise that that many magazines still exist, but that is a lot of titles. So why would they suddenly be for sale?
Yeah, look, you're right. I mean, R Media is the magazine industry, really, in Australia. All of the mainstream titles, or, you know, when you look at other kind of mainstream titles, they probably owned them and closed them themselves at some point. But the reason they're for sale is, well, partly it's because it's owned by private equity, and they tend to exit after 5 to 7 years. Now, because they are a private business, they're not on the ASX, so we don't get all those numbers you otherwise get every 6 months. But there's some indications. So there's a thing called Standard Media Index, which registers how much big advertisers are spending. And month in and month out for the last 4 or 5 years, magazines are always down. And most of that means that that's less money going into R Media. And I did spend a bit of time last night, Viv, going onto ASIC and search for documents. And they're not particularly up to date, but the last documents they filed were late last year, and that was for their 2022 numbers. And at that point, R Media's advertising revenue was $48 million, which is not much compared to what it would have been before COVID. What was really telling was that their profits were really badly down. So they were down to $4 million a year. Now, that was from $41 million the year before. So I think Mercury have probably taken, because they bought it cheaply, they've probably taken enough profit out of the business on the way through. And now they're deciding that it's time for them to move on and hand it over to somebody else who hopefully still loves print magazines.
Well, if there's anyone out there who would like to buy a magazine publisher, they might be in luck.
You're listening to Medialand on ABC Radio National. I'm Tim Burrows.
And I'm Vivian Kelly. SBS is celebrating 50 years broadcasting in Australia in 2025. It's a beloved service for many, but like most major media companies, it sits in a tricky position in 2025.
James Taylor has been the managing director of SBS since 2018, and his current term runs until 2028. James, welcome along.
Brilliant to be here. Thanks for having me.
Let's start with how you define your role as running SBS. How do you think about balancing the need to provide a multicultural outlook with serving all of Australia?
Yeah, I think it's all part of the same story, Tim, that has existed for 50 years since, you know, the inception of SBS via radio stations 2EA and 3EA. The charter has remained largely, you know, untouched through that duration, and it speaks to the need to serve all Australians, to quote from it, to showcase the multicultural and Indigenous and Torres Strait Islander perspectives that exist in this country, and to foster a sense of social cohesion amongst all Australians, whether you can trace your ancestry back 60,000 years or whether you can trace your ancestry back 6 years. We are motivated by a desire to bring people together, to engage in empathetic, truthful, impartial conversation, and to make people feel part of this great Australian story. So I don't feel that it's a balance. I feel that all Australians benefit from SBS and its services, even to the extent that they lamentably sometimes don't consume our content.
And James, in the past 50 years, not only has technology changed a lot, so has the cultural and linguistic makeup of Australia. So do you think you're still meeting that mandate that you were first given all those years ago?
Yeah, absolutely. We broadcast to this day in 60 languages. The languages we serve Australians in are sourced from a deep understanding of the changing face and makeup of Australia. You know, SBS was born out of an imperative from the Whitlam government and then implemented in its, you know, more modern incarnation by the Fraser government. Soon after its creation, I think Malcolm Fraser said words to the effect of, you know, multiculturalism is not the mere toleration of difference, but the active embrace of the cultural diversity that migration brings to this country. I won't have got that perfect, but I think if you were to say that today, it would be just as relevant. I think the thing about an Australian organisation serving news and information and other content to multicultural Australians, and particularly in a first language that is not English, it's not just about content in that language, but it's content by and for the community that those people live in, by broadcasters that are members of that community and therefore understand what issues matter to those communities and understand what issues the rest of Australia needs to understand.
We're speaking to James Taylor, the Managing Director of SBS, which this year is celebrating 50 years of broadcasting in Australia. James, when I came to get you from the waiting room, I was carrying my laptop and the tab that was open was a replay of a Tour de France stage, which you were very pleased about. I do wonder, though, where does sport fit in terms of content for SBS and serving different language and cultural groups, particularly as sporting rights get more and more expensive?
Yeah, I'm so delighted to see it on your laptop, and I'd encourage anyone to tune in to the Tour de France coverage on SBS right now. And, of course, we've got the Tour de France fam following the Tour de France men's event later on this month. Sport's an incredibly powerful way of connecting people through different cultures. You know, we are also the rights holder of the FIFA Men's World Cup and have been that rights holder since 1986. We have the 2026 FIFA Men's World Cup coming up exclusively. It's a wonderful opportunity for us to engage in celebrations of not only the wonderful competition of sport, but also the connection that that competition provides between different cultural and language groups. SBS brought football to Australia and proudly still has it as a prominent part of its offering. It is a way for us to reach large audiences in a way that honours our charter, but also to bring in people that may be infrequent viewers of SBS. The Tour de France is the largest annual sporting event in the world. The World Cup is the largest sporting event in the world. We are the longest rights holder of the Tour de France in the world, which is you know, something that I'm very proud of, and I'm delighted that audience grows significantly, actually, year on year, up about 20% last year, 20% the year before. So we're finding new audiences with that fantastic demonstration of sporting prowess.
And the commercial side of things does account for about a third of your funding. How much of your time is taken up with that side of things?
I've not done the maths on it, Tim, but you're right. It's about 35%. I mean, obviously, when you're in a role like mine, you need to make sure that you're spinning multiple plates and ensuring that we are delivering value to audiences is the first and principal priority. And if you're delivering value to audiences, then it's a bit easier to deliver value to commercial partners, isn't it? And so, obviously, I need to be engaged with our commercial partners who so generously support us. And that's born of a principal desire to make sure that we're delivering against our charter and delivering large and growing audiences every year.
When I look at your plans for revenue going forward, and I turn to your last annual report for that, which admittedly is nearly a year ago, it looks as if in real terms you're planning for slightly less revenue in the future. That seems a bit unambitious.
No, I think perhaps if you're looking at last annual report, you're perhaps comparing a World Cup year with a non-World Cup year. And so the World Cup is obviously a significant additional revenue source for us when the World Cup's on. So if you're comparing FY24 with no World Cup to FY23 with a World Cup, you'll see that drop off. But if you were to look forward into our accounts for the year that's just started, you'd see that you know, the World Cup presents a meaningful portion of revenue to offset the costs associated with the rights and the delivery.
You've been the Managing Director of SBS for about 6.5 years now. Now, none of your predecessors have done more than 8 years. your current term runs until 2028. That would make you the longest serving managing director if you did it. Do you intend to serve it out?
Well, I love the job, Tim. I regard my job as the best job in the Australian media sector. I love the combination of delivering very clear services against our charter, which are aimed at positively promoting social cohesion and therefore are constructive in nature. I love the confluence of commercial and public sector factors that we have to consider. I like the fact that we have to deliver against a public mandate whilst also being asked to earn a reasonable amount of revenue in support of that delivery. I also love the SBS team. It is a brilliant, constructive, energetic team to be part of, and I absolutely intend to be there for as long as the board will have me.
Do you intend to go through to the end of your second term?
That's the point of a term, Tim. I've signed up for another term and my intent is to serve it, and I'll keep the job and I'll stay motivated for as long as I feel like I'm adding value in the job.
See how he's trying to trap you there, James, so that if you go against that, we can write a headline. We are speaking to James Taylor, the Managing Director of SBS. So speaking of sticking around, when the former MD of the ABC, David Anderson, announced he was leaving, and before the current MD, Hugh Marks, had been appointed, I think I saw your image and name thrown around quite a few times that you might, in fact, move over here to the ABC to be the managing director. How does it feel when you're reading articles about your own potential future and employment?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? The media loves to talk about itself. I imagine that the speculation ran far and wide as to who might be interested in this role. I didn't apply for the role. I love my job now, and I have a lot of respect for what David Anderson did in the role, and I have a lot of respect for Hugh, and I hope he goes well too.
James, I mentioned earlier that I had been watching the Tour de France on SBS on demand, and you often hear people saying that that application or that platform seems to be more seamless than some of its commercial competitors. How much have you had to invest in getting that tech right, though, so that the user experience on Catch Up isn't frustrating? And particularly where a lot of frustrations emerge is when a program tries to transition from the program to the ad and then back again.
Yeah, it's something we've invested a lot in and a lot of time and energy. We also made a decision that we wanted to be world-class. You know, we are not the largest media organisation in the country, and so we better be delivering a world-class experience when people come to us. They better know they're on an SBS service. SBS On Demand is world-class. It is the most popular Australian service, a streaming service in both the Apple and the Android app stores, which is quite something given its relative size. And you're right, there is quite a set of complicated underpinning technology which drive those services, and moving from programs into ads and out again is no mean feat, but that team is extraordinarily capable. And every week is delivering small new innovation onto the platform to make it a better experience. I'm so delighted by that. We recently brought podcasts into our streaming platform. We will soon be launching live audio services into the platform. And we were the first platform in Australia, and I think the world, but someone can fact check me, which allows audience members to opt out of particular category of advertising. So you can opt out of gambling advertising, you can opt out of quick service restaurant advertising, you can opt out of alcohol advertising by letting us know. And it's really important for us that we respond to audience preferences. And if people have perspectives about things that will make the experience more safe for them, we're really happy to respond to that.
Something we talked about recently on the show was the annual digital news report. And one of the questions asked in that is about trusted news brands, which news providers Australians most believe in. And often SBS is right at the top of that. How do you feel when we think about one of the most controversial topics at the moment? How do you feel your journalists and also the wider media have gone in covering the Gaza conflict?
It's certainly a complicated story with lots of moving parts, isn't it? And it has a visceral impact on people here and in other places, obviously. We have, you know, a very strong commitment to the best journalistic practices. We have clear codes and guidelines which are transparently available to audience members, which describe how we will make content, a focus on balance and impartiality, fairness and truth in our journalism. We encourage audience members to contact us if they have concerns. We have an independent ombudsman that is SBS ombudsman that's been part of our offer for 20 years that makes independent adjudications on content matters. And of course, because our code of practice exists in a co-regulatory environment, if people are unhappy with the finding of the SBS ombudsman, they are able to go to the ACMA, who may at its own discretion choose to investigate. So I think we are very considered in our approach to journalism and our commitment to impartiality in the other indicia I mentioned. And we are transparently open to feedback from audience members if they feel we're not getting it right. And we listen to and learn from that feedback.
One of the things that emerged in the ABC versus the Antoinette Latouf case was how the ABC responded to pressure from pro-Israel lobbyists. Did you take any lessons from that about how the SBS should engage with and respond to lobbyists?
I think we respond to feedback from individuals or groups consistently, which is we provide clear mechanisms that people can provide us feedback, and we have processes that allow that feedback to be diligently considered independently via our ombudsman and through the appeals processes that are available.
James Taylor, Managing Director of SBS, thank you very much for joining us on Medialand.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for your time.
And if you're wondering why we've talked to the Managing Director of SBS but haven't yet had the ABC's boss here on Medialand, Hugh Marks has so far declined to join us, but our studio door is always open.
Tim, I imagine you've had quite a bit of screen time recently as you've been making your way around the world. Have you seen anything good?
Yes, Viv. When you're flying for 24 hours in each direction to an advertising conference, which I was, there's a lot of screen time involved. Now, one of the things I did was I binged seasons 1 and 2 of a series called The Gold, which you'll find in Australia on Stan. It's the BBC's story of the aftermath of one of Britain's most notorious armed robberies, Brinksmat, it was called. Kind of unexpectedly for the crooks, they found themselves with tons of gold they didn't know that they were going to get, which is actually quite hard to get rid of if you suddenly find yourself with tons of gold. So there was a really interesting sort of disconnect between season 1 and season 2, which has only just become available. Season 1, they kind of knew what happened. Season 2, they had to use what I think the polite term would be was creative license. But yeah, a really interesting show. How about you, Viv?
I'm not just saying this because our Medialand guest this week was the MD of SBS, James Taylor, but I am hooked on the Tour de France, whether it's watching it live, if I can manage to stay up late enough, or the catch-up highlights on SBS On Demand. Every year I forget how good the Tour is, and every year I'm taken back in.
Well, it's lucky you're a night owl, Viv. Remember to follow Medialand on the ABC Listen app.
And if you could bring back one magazine that's no longer in print, what would it be? We would love to hear from you. Email us at medialand@abc.net.au.
Thank you to our producer, Rob Kelly. We'll catch you the same time next week in your feeds and on Radio National.
See you, Tim.
Toodle pip, Viv.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.